Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gowan.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live. This is a show about love letters and really the ongoing adventure in the strength of the human spirit. Teresa and I are just always amazed at the generosity of people who are willing to share stories and help us learn more about how to live life.
Right.
And with that, I'm going to go to our guest, Bruce Landry, who is a project manager, for Rafiki Enterprises. And Rafiki is, according to Bruce, Swahili for friend. So, Bruce, I'm just going to go to you because I know there's a lot to talk about. Will you talk just about the kind of construction you do? You mentioned for women who are on their own and the loveliness behind that I want you to talk about.
Well, actually, when I resigned from my career, some friends of mine who were...
What was your career then?
I was a risk manager of hospitals.
Oh, okay.
And after an accident, I gave my life to doing what I'm doing now. And some friends of mine who worked in the hospital with me at St. Francis Hospital said, you know what, you would be a great honeydew man. And I started out as honeydew, you know.
Now,
and
let's explain that for those who have never heard the phrase.
Yeah, honeydew, honeydew, I need you to do this, honey, I need
honey
you to do
this,
that.
Honey, do that,
So I figured, well, in order to do this, I wanted to do it for the people who really needed me, ladies who had no husbands to do
no
this.
No honey to do.
No honey to do it.
Yeah.
And that's how it started out. And now it's grown into this business that I own called Rafiki Enterprises. And still is to help people who don't have someone to do this.
So what is it you do in this construction?
I do anything from changing your toilet seat to remodeling your home. And we just finished doing two projects of condo conversions.
That's wonderful. You wonder about, you know, people who have no male strength to turn to. That's
right.
Really nice. I like that. And what about your surf shop days?
Oh, well, I had started a surf shop 6 years ago in Sebastopol, California. And this was after my accident. Let me back up.
I don't know about your
second.
Accident, so do you want to...
I'm a recovered quadriplegic. Uh-huh. I was paralyzed. I had an accident on July 4th of 2000, preparing for my daughter's wedding. And at the time, I was taken to the hospital, airlifted to the hospital, and they thought that I had a hematoma around my spinal cord. And a great friend of mine by the name of Doyle John Borchett III, a neural brain surgeon at Stanford, a surfer, and he treated me, and then they released me because I got better.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to work, and I went to work for St. Luke's Hospital as a risk manager and safety officer.
So for how long were you unable to move?
For almost a year.
Oh, my goodness.
And I went back to work almost a year and a day to the date. I was at the work one morning, woke up, felt like I had the flu, and went to work anyway, came out of the board meeting.
This is after the accident.
Yeah.
You felt,
And I came out of the board meeting, walking down the hall, fell face first on the ground, couldn't feel anything below my neck.
Oh.
So they ran me into the emergency room and did an MRI, came out and said, what did you do? Your neck's broken.
Oh, my goodness.
So they took me back to Sonoma County, and they got a hold of John. John came in, and make a long story short, he's a miracle worker. He gave me an 86% chance not to even live through the operation, and here I am today. And I spent the rest of my life, I made a promise pact to God Almighty, whoever she may be, that if I could have my body back, I would spend the rest of my life, give away my career, and spend the rest of my life trying to teach people to not fear, first of all, and to love each other, get the aloha spirit and to love each other, and to find some way of helping young people. And that's when I started the surf shop. That was an idea I had. Wow, you know, if I could get a surf shop.
And you were a good surfer for all.
Yeah.
Already, yeah.
I taught surfing.
Uh-huh.
And so I started with young people coming into the shop. And then what I would do is get them interested, and I'd talk to the parents and say, you know what, if you have a child that's having problems, let me know and bring them in. So they did. So I got them interested in surfing instead of being in gangs and on drugs and violence and stuff. and having trouble in school, and they bettered themselves. And mm-hmm. that was a great goal. The only problem was I was a bad businessman. Mm-hmm. I gave away everything. And, of course, I was going to lose the business, so I just closed it. And at that time is when my friend said, well, be a honeydew man. You can still do what you want to do. So now what I do is when I remodel someplace, instead of throwing stuff away that are taking out of homes and stuff, my house is full of people's stuff. And I give it to the unfortunate, the people who can't afford it. I take it to Habitat for Humanity mm-hmm. or whatever. So it keeps the circle going. And that's the reason I'm not a contractor. Because if I'm a contractor, I have to charge the same amount of money as contractors do. So I'm not. So I can charge less. And that's the way I am. If I could give it away, I'd give it away, but I can't.
But
do
you
that.
Have your own bills to pay, sure, of course. So, yes, that accident sounds. So you this was on the way to your daughter's wedding.
Oh, no. We had my daughter's wedding at our home. We were preparing our lot.
But you were able to go through with the wedding. I mean, this didn't hit you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was paralyzed at the time, but we had the wedding. They helped me get around. One thing I want to say without getting emotional, too emotional, is...
No, feel free to
get
emotional.
What drove me to getting better was the only thing I could remember from the accident was we were preparing that morning at our home for this wedding. We bought the property, we did the landscaping, we did all the construction and everything. And we stopped for lunch. That morning we had bought church pews from the Luther Burbank Center. We stopped for lunch. After lunch, we were going to go back and build the rails around the lower deck. And my daughter said, "Papa, instead of doing that, can we hang the lights in the trees?" And I said, "Sure." So I got up on the ladder, and we were hanging the lights. And I was going to hang the light in the tree in front of me. And she says, "Papa, can you put it in the tree behind you?" And it was as if someone or something had a hold of me, and I was falling straight back, and I couldn't turn one way or the other, fell perfectly back, hit my neck on the church pew. Oh. And all I remember was waking up, hearing helicopters, thinking, well, I'm hallucinating. I'm back in Vietnam because I was a corpsman in Vietnam.
Yes. I know we're going to talk about that in a minute. Yeah.
And I thought I was hallucinating. And then I kind of went out. I came back again. And when I came to again, I noticed I was laying in her lap. She was bent over me. And she said, "Papa, I'm sorry I did this to you."
Oh, gosh.
So I passed out. As I was laying in the hospital, I had made a pact to myself and to God or whoever, that I got to get better. This child cannot live with this for the rest of her life.
God bless
so that
you.
Drove me.
Yes.
And then my son, as wonderful as he is, he knew of a movie called Surfing for Life. And it was a great inspiration for me. And they kept playing it so I could see it.
Oh, and keep dragging you forward.
Kept dragging me forward. Every time I'd go into these morphine hazes and stuff, I would be surfing with these guys and having
Everything about
day.
This is how horrible and how wonderful.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it drove me to what I do today and what I did. I became a California Coalition of Surf Clubs judge, and I would travel and do testimonies on the beach for people who knew me when I was paralyzed, when I was down, and then I still surf.
Oh, good for
Even
you.
Though they told me I'd never surf again, I'd never be able to drive my truck or anything, I do it.
Good.
Because I try to teach people that if you let go of fear, you can do anything in life. You have to live to the fullest.
Well, let's talk about Vietnam, because I know that had to do with your love letter. Will you just tell us what you want to tell us about that?
Yes. Actually, since we spoke, I was going to do a love letter to the Vietnamese people.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I went through all these changes
sure.
in my life. But Vietnam, I do want to say that if I could write a million love letters, one of them would be directed to the people of Vietnam.
And tell us why.
I went into the service. I was drafted. Mm-hmm. And I was drafted at a young age. And went into the service. And then I had a cush job. I was in, make a long story short, I was in Fort Knox, Kentucky. And I got a call from my mother that my surrogate brother had gotten killed in Vietnam.
Oh.
So, of course, I got angry like everyone. I ran across the quadrant, went to the business office and said, I want to go to Vietnam. But you can't. You don't have enough years left. I said, well, I'll give you as many years as it takes. I want to go to Vietnam. I want to be the best that there is. I want to be special forces. I want to do all this. I want to kill the people who killed him. I went to Vietnam with anger and revenge. And I wound up there, and for the first year and a half, I was like everyone else, and I just thought that that was the truth, that he had gotten killed by the Vietnamese or Viet Cong, and had anger. And then one day, I was a sergeant. Then one day, I was ordered to take a squad of guys to a place called Zion, and it was supposed to be a simple task. It's supposed to be a task where we just take C rations and we exchange them. No big deal, you know. Well, on our way out of the company area, the cook saw us leave and he says, hey, would you do me a favor before you leave? Would you go to the dump and take some stuff for us? I said, yeah, sure. So we load it up. So now we take off. Well, people don't realize that during the Vietnam War, there were a lot of weird stuff. For instance, I was told, whatever you do in the Saigon district, do not lock and load for no reason at all. Mm-hmm. So I had the squad, you know, man down. So we take off, we go to the dump, we get to the dump, and first thing I know, we get under attack. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that went through my head is, we can't do anything. So we hand to hand, and we get out of there, and we take off. So now we're all scared and everything. We take off. We go to Zion. Drive. Have a great time. Get to Zion. First thing that happens is we get ready to back in to where we have to go, and a missile hits a tanker truck right in front of us, and it's raining fuel everywhere and gas and fire. Well, the driver freaked out, and I loaded everything up with the crew. We take off, but I drive. I'm the highest ranking, mm-hmm. but I drive. And we'd been drinking and been smoking grass and, you know, stuff. And we take off, and we're going down the road. And this road, you got to realize, is only wide enough for a normal car. And here we are in a big deuce and a half going down here. And I'm barrel out, trying to get out of there, save my guys. And as I'm going down the rice paddies, I look ahead, and there is an elderly couple on the right and a young lady on the left with a child. And as I approached them, the young lady with the child threw the kid in front of the truck. And I hit the child, and it knocked it up in the windshield, and I killed the kid. Mm. Well, I freak out, because as soon as I hit the brakes, we get under fire. It was a trap to try and stop us, so I take off. So I get back to the compound, and first thing I do is I tell all the guys, I start unloading. I got to go tell the lieutenant what happened. So I walk in, and he says, this is war. Forget it. Just get out there and do your job. I said, okay, I'll do that. So I go back. Tell the guys, let's unload. You know, so you have a manifest sheet that you have to check mm-hmm. everything in with. So we start looking at the manifest sheet, and we look at the stuff that was given to us, and it doesn't match. So I go, wow, what's going on? So I go back again to the lieutenant. He said, don't worry about it. Just get out there and get it unloaded. And he takes the sheet from me. So we start unloading this thing. I was naive. I'm a gentleman from Louisiana, and I didn't know anything about dope or anything else.
So how did what was the effect on this?
It was the fact that we had made a drug run without knowing it. We had just hauled a load of heroin for guys who were trying to make money off the war.
My goodness, I never.
When I found out about it, it devastated me, and I tried to tell everyone, and no one wanted to hear about it. So I asked for a transfer, and I was given the opportunity for the transfer, and I was put up north. Well, I wound up getting a 3-day leave out of all this stuff. So I said, "Well, I'm going to go to my surrogate brother Jimmy's squad mm-hmm. up in Eagle's Nest, and I want to go up there and see what it was like." Well, I get up there, we get drunk, you know, at the EM club and everything, and I'm crying in my beer, and an old sergeant was sitting there. And he says, I can't curse, but he says to me, you got it all wrong. If you're talking about Jimmy Ledoux, you got it all wrong. He wasn't killed by the VC. He was killed by us. I had spent a year and a half with this. I had done this to this child. And then I found out that everything I had volunteered was under false pretenses that he was in a sacrifice mission in order to, he was recon, and he was killed by us. So now my life's devastated.
So what would your letter be?
My letter to those folks would be, because since I come back, I've met Vietnamese people and I've tried to tell them how sorry I was that I even felt that way. And there are a lot of people like myself. I was a very young man. But they don't, to now it doesn't seem that it's the word has gotten through to them that, yeah, I was angry. Yeah, I was taught by everyone that I know that that was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. It was the American way of doing it. Truth is, I let anger guide me when I should let my heart guide me instead of what I was taught. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of vets out there who went through the same exact thing. We didn't know. We killed a lot of people. We hurt a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, and I apologize from the bottom of my heart. If I could ever take anything back, I would do it. I can't take back the life of the child. Right. I can't take back all the wrong things that we did there. Mm-hmm. But I ask forgiveness from all of the Vietnamese people to let them realize that most American people, we don't hate, we love. And we're misguided sometimes. We misguide our children. And I was one of those. And so are a lot of vets out there. And any vet that hears this, I hope that they realize that you can get over it.
You can get over the anger and the hate.
You can get over the anger, the hate of yourself for what you did. You know, and that's why I changed and I did my love letter to my wife, because without her and the support of my children, I wouldn't be here today. You know, I would be like most vets. I would have committed suicide because of the pain and the sorrow, you know. And
you wrote a love letter to your wife?
I wrote a love letter to
her. When did you do this?
After we spoke.
Oh, do you have it?
I have it.
Please, do we have time to read it? Please read it. Okay, I love when people bring things already done. Let's read as much of that as you can in the time we have left.
All right. I got to get my bifocus. To my dearest Nettie.
Okay.
Nettie is her nickname that I gave to her.
How long have you been married, did you say?
35 years.
35 years, and where did you meet her?
That's another long story, but I met her in Missouri. I ran away from home when I came back from Vietnam after a bad divorce. I met her on the road. I used to be a carny.
Oh, my. So
I ran away and joined the circus, basically. She came down. She's from Malibu. Met her in Missouri, running away, too, and fell in love with her.
At first sight?
At first sight.
What does she look like?
Blonde hair, blue eyes, gorgeous, most beautiful California girl you could ever ask
for. let's have the letter.
To my dearest Nettie. I could write a million times how much I love and admire you, but you know that already. And I wanted to say something I've never told you. That is how sorry I am for being so self-centered. As I have always said, you are not only my love and lover, but even after 35 years, you are still my best friend. Best friends don't hurt each other, and they don't do things to put the friend behind them, but out in front of them so all can enjoy. For all of the times I have taken center stage in the conversations with our friends and others, telling all my stories instead of letting you and the children speak, I am truly sorry. I want to thank you for all the times you have supported me, even in my failures, and gone out of your way to even praise me to others. Throughout the years, we have had our rough times and disagreements, but we made it through. These and proves to me our true love. I have told others of the times when I attempted the suicides, and you not only stood by my side, but helped me to recover with your kind words and support and gave me courage to go on. What it boils down to, I owe my life to you. I have no excuse for the way I have acted, but please forgive me and know that I'll work for to be more aware of you and the kids and to allow your light to shine and for you to get the attention you well deserve. No husband or lover could be more proud of their wife than I am of you and your accomplishments and for allowing me to be part of your life. For all of the times you have sat on cold, wet, windswept beaches to watch me surf, I truly thank you for this. By the time you receive this letter, I will have participated in the radio show by KUSF Love Letters. I hope to tell the world about my experiences in Vietnam for the last time and let it go. You will never have to sit at a party or a friend's house and listen to it again. I do love and cherish you and will until the day I die. Bubba.
Oh, my, that's just...
Well, Janet.
I can't even talk. That's just a prize winner
letter. Let's tell our listeners why this is such a prize winner.
Go ahead. I can't talk. You tell me.
Well,
oh, my. The love letter as a beautiful apology and setting things clear. I won't even say setting things right because your love is so obviously right, but setting them clearer.
Thank you.
And you talk about her, and you talk about yourself a little bit, but only in terms of how you feel in her light.
Right.
So it's not a letter about you. It's a letter about her that really makes it a love letter.
The only thing I want to add to it is I thought about it on the way here, is through all of her accomplishments that she has done, she has never put me in the shadows. I've always been her.
It's an important thing to say. I'm glad you're going to. Now, will you write this in your handwriting?
Oh, yes.
Please, yes.
Most definitely. And
that is just
be
beautiful.
To her. Thank
it's
you.
Also a promise. It's not only
yes.
an apology, it's a promise.
That's good point. Yes.
That's what friends do. They promise and they stick to the promise.
And that's one of the things we say love letters are for. Promises
that's right.
meant to be kept.
That's right.
Because you put it in writing, and if that's not a contract worth holding you to, nothing is.
That's right.
Written and signed.
Right, that's written and signed.
So you'll mail it to her?
I'm going to actually not mail it. To me, mailing is impersonal.
Okay.
I am going to take her out to River's End.
Oh, good. Good.
For our anniversary. And I'm going to hand it to her.
And then tell her to read it later
and
when
have
she's
her
by
read
herself. Because it's private,
but
reading a
right.
love letter, right?
That's right.
You're just a treat of a man. I'm so glad you're here.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate you inviting me.
Okay. Now,
giving me the opportunity.
I do have one question. I don't know. Do I have time for one?
Yes.
Okay. Because what you talked about in terms of writing a letter to the Vietnamese people, now you can write a letter to a whole group. We've actually had a couple of beautiful letters. But the issue is, and I know you say you want to let it go, and I certainly understand that, and that's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
For yourself and for your wife and your life. But if you wanted to say one more thing before you let it go, is there some place you could write this letter? You write beautifully.
Thank you.
And I can tell you just write from your heart. As you would
right.
say it, you write it down, which is, we say, the best kind of love letter. Just say it as you feel it.
That's exactly.
And then is there, like, a VA paper you could send it to or some place you could send it let it do its maximum work?
Yeah. I'm actually writing a book.
Okay.
And in this book will be a lot of this that I want to say to them. However, I am going to personally write a letter to the Vietnamese people.
Where will you send it?
To the Vietnamese consulate.
Perfect. Okay.
And I hope and pray that some generation of Vietnam
yes.
will know the love that we have for them. So.
And that you do, and the kind of man that you are, even though you were there fighting a war against them.
All right. And any vet coming back from any of the wars, you know, that's one thing I didn't mention, was I've had vets from Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Their families call me and come to me, and I sat with them and let them know I went through the same thing.
Yeah. How do they know to call you?
Because everyone who knows me...
So word gets around,
gets
you're saying?
Around.
Okay, that's
and
nice.
They contact me. I'm not afraid for anyone to have my cell phone number that needs help. And I want them to know that they're not alone. If I can save one life, I'm there.
As if you've saved the whole world.
That's right.
So I want to say then to our listeners, if there's anybody out there who would like to talk to Bruce about anything, but any, excuse me, people returning from war who need to talk to somebody, you can just email us at the Love Letter Squad, and we will forward it to him.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Janet, our guests are so wise. Every week we hear we hear something that we could literally hang on the wall. And one of the things, you said many, many important things, Bruce. One of the ones that I picked out is the counsel to let go of your fear.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And at first I thought you meant, when you were talking about your physical injury, I thought, oh, physical. But now I see it's emotional.
It's not only emotional. I've had people come to me and see me dancing and come up on the floor and say, I sure wish I could dance like you. And I tell them, you can. Close your eyes. Why is it that people can't dance? It's because they're afraid what people might say. Mm-hmm. We teach our children to, in this inner world, you know, and kids grow up with, I got to be embarrassed.
You can do anything.
Perfect. Just don't hurt anyone, but live to the fullest. Mm-hmm. You only have one time. You only have one aloha life. Live it to the fullest. And love everyone, and love what you do. Be proud of you.
Yes.
You know.
I had a dance teacher once who said, quite simply, looked at a group of people, and not everybody was catching on to a couple of complicated steps, and he looked at everyone, and he said, if you're smiling, you're doing it right.
That's right. That's right.
And I thought that was just wonderful.
That's exactly it.
So, you're kind of saying the same thing, huh?
That's it.
So sing like nobody's listening, and dance like nobody's watching.
Sing like you don't need the money, yeah.
Do from your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this letter is just wonderful. I'm still kind of, my mind is still on your letter.
Well, you
said your wife teaches nursing?
She does. She's the professor at
San
Francisco State. She's a great professor. She's caring.
Yeah.
She's very, very caring.
What an important profession.
Oh, shit, yeah. We were both going to be nurses.
Oh, really?
And, of course, you know, being poor, you can't always afford what you want to do. So we made a decision one time. Which one of us can go forward? Well, she's the brains.
Aww.
She's got the brains. I knew she'd succeed. So she got to go for it and get her PhD.
Wow.
And I'm happy doing what I do.
That's really impressive.
You know, so it worked out fantastic.
What's her name?
Lynette. And she is the joy of my life. She's had such a rough life in the past.
That's why you referred to her as doctor before.
That's right.
I heard that.
And, you know, I tell everyone the funniest thing is I'm from Louisiana, and she's from Africa. She was born in Nairobi, Kenya, and without disclosing a lot of personal information about her and everything, whenever we first met and we would go home to my home in Louisiana, my father pulled me aside. He said, I thought you called me, because she has blonde hair, blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you called me and said you met an African girl. I said, she's from Africa.
Oh, sure,
You know, she was in
Africa. People come to all kinds of information with their set.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it was wonderful. And she is, you know, I have grown so much with her.
I bet.
I visit back to Louisiana, and I see my siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the only one, we always make a joke, I'm the only one with all my teeth. I'm the only one who has succeeded in school and at least going to college. And it's all because she's been there to say, you know, you can do it.
Such a love story worth telling. Oh, thank you, Bruce, for coming here to
so
do this with
much.
Us. I'm going to listen to this one again and again, I know.
Yeah. Well, and thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you for joining us. If you want to hear this one again, it will be on our website very shortly.
Oh, yes.
You want to give the love
I would love to. Please, if you would like to hear anything we do, past shows and the ones coming up, our website will have them, MP3 files waiting for your listening pleasure at loveletterssquad, loveletterssquad.com.
Right.
And it's a really nice, easily navigable website, and I think you'll have a good time.
Mm-hmm. So as we end this program, again, we thank our guests, and to our listeners, we encourage you to put your loving sentiments into words and send them while you still have the chance.
Yes, and please remember, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion.
So until next week, with love from Teresa
and Janet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.